It's OWC Radio 2.0, episode number 33. I'm Tim Robertson, and we're bringing back Steve Sandy to talk about the Apple Spring Event. New MacBooks, price drop Apple TV, and of course, Apple Watch. And it is OWC Radio number 33. And hey, it's only been two episodes. I missed him so much. I had to ask Steve Sandy to come back on. Welcome back after a one episode hiatus.
Yeah, it gave me a little bit of time to maybe rest up for this episode. So thank you very much.
Well, I figured it was a really big Apple event that we had this week. And as we record this on Tuesday, the Apple event happened yesterday on Monday. And this was kind of an anticipated thing. Everyone knew it was coming even before Apple sent the invites, and everyone assumed that it probably would focus on pricing and availability on the Apple Watch, but it was a whole lot more than that. So I thought, who better than Steve Sandy, who, by the way, is also doing some writing on the side at blog.macsales.com, the OWC blog. You're doing some writing there now.
Yes, I am. I started last Tuesday, so it's been about a week now, and I feel so bad because I didn't write anything yesterday.
Well, the thing is, a lot of people would assume that our blog is just about, you know, we're writing about our products, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. We write a variety of subject blogs at the site, and I think you fit in perfect there.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing I really kind of like about this is, you know, when I was talking to Jared and Josh, or is it Josh?
It's Josh.
Yeah, the other Josh. I know too many Joshes, I'm sorry. But when I was talking to the two gentlemen about the possibility of doing some blogging over there, it was kind of interesting because they really wanted that kind of outside look at things like a little bit more like what I do over at Apple World Today. So I'm really enjoying it because it gives me a chance to kind of come in, you know, look at some things from a slightly different perspective than I'm looking at them for the website I run. And it's just fun. You know, I kind of like having that split personality, being able to write for two sites.
Now, obviously, I knew that was coming when we had you on the show 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. But I couldn't say anything at the time. But I'm glad to see that yet another outlet I could read my Steve Sandy. That's how I refer to it, by the way. It's my Steve Sandy.
Aww.
It's a state of mind. So how's things going with AppleWorld.today?
Things are actually going pretty good. Yesterday was, of course, thanks to the event, one of our biggest traffic days since our first week. Now, our first week was just incredible at Apple World Today because we got fireballed, which, if you're unfamiliar with the term, and I know you know what it means, Tim.
Absolutely.
But, if listeners are unfamiliar with the term, it means that we got a mention on during Fireball, which is John Gruber's amazing little blog out there. And that kind of set the stage for the first week of life of Apple World Today. We had huge, huge traffic. And then the second week, it kind of crashed down to reality.
Yeah, that will happen.
Yeah, and, you know, it was one of those things. I think we kind of expected it because we saw that a lot of incoming traffic was coming from Daring Fireball, and it was like, well, that's not going to last forever. But yesterday was a really, really good day. We had a lot of traffic. We had a lot of comments on some of the posts about some of Apple's new products. And altogether, we came out of it just feeling really pumped about the future. So far, things are going pretty darn good.
Well, I know I spent an hour and a half, almost an hour and 45-minute Apple show, I guess we would call it. I don't think a keynote is really right because it's not a keynote. It's an event.
Yeah.
So the Apple Show is what I'm going to call it.
The Apple Show, starring Tim Cook.
I spent the entire time conversing with people on Twitter, and some of the results of some of the questions that I was asking people was surprising, and we'll get to that. And oh, by the way, we're not doing the three random questions because, well, we just did that with Steve, and I kind of save that for new people when they come on. Or if they've never done it before, then I'll hit them up with the three random questions. But since Steve is a veteran of OWC Radio, we're going to skip it this time. That work for you?
Well, you can ask me a lot of direct questions.
Direct questions,
not random questions. There we go.
So Apple opened the show, and I have to say, it's kind of neat seeing these stores in other countries, and it looks like Apple's starting to make a pretty big push into China, although it's only, 20 stores so far in China?
Yeah, something like that. But by the end of the year, I think they're saying 40 or 43. It's a huge number by the end of 2015. And they must just be, you know, going into every city that they possibly can over a certain population, finding the best possible place to put in these new stores over there. But I really enjoyed watching that video that started up the event yesterday because it showed that kind of universality of Apple and the excitement that is built up around these products. It was really cool to see that.
An Apple store in China and an Apple store in the United States is exactly the same as a McDonald's in the United States and a McDonald's in China, right? You do kind of want to get that universal customer experience, though.
Yeah.
And I don't think Apple's, the way they sell in their stores, is really indicative of any one culture, if you will. It's very inclusive.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, well, and in fact, you know, one of the things that I really love, we have a young writer who comes in once a week, and he does a little piece on accessibility for us, and by the name of Alex Jurgensen. Alex is blind, and so he looks at the world of Apple, you know, through those eyes. And it's always amazing when he talks about things like, you know, or points out things that a lot of us aren't aware. The fact that Apple does such an amazing job at bringing in people with disabilities to work at the Apple stores. And, you know, I've been to quite a few Apple stores in my life. Gee, I wonder why. But, you know, it's always amazing to be able to go into a store and you're talking with somebody who is, you know, selling you this product, and they're differently abled. You know, they're not this, you know, standard nerd that you would expect. And I think that kind of fits into that theme that, you know, it's like they realize that the world is full of a lot of different people, and let's try to make our stores comfortable to absolutely everyone.
Yeah, they're very much an inclusive company. They have been kind of from the beginning, I would think. I mean, I remember, you know, back in the 80s thinking about Apple and that rainbow logo, and it felt like a very inclusive company, that their products and that culture that surrounded it kind of wanted to bring you in. You felt good about joining it, even in the dark times in the mid-90s when it looked like Apple was going to go out of business. They still had that sense of community. And quite honestly, Steve, that's what brought me into Apple. Other than the promise of ease of use and intuitiveness, it was that sense of community that, you know, kept me in the Apple products. It's why I do what I do. It's that community. It's not necessarily the company. To me, it's the community that surrounds it, which includes people in the company as well, of course. But I don't think that's ever going to change. That's just the DNA of that company. And I think Tim Cook, the way he's running the company now and the team that he's assembled, and to a lesser degree, what he inherited when Steve Jobs left and his hires, that's just who they are. And I think that the video at the beginning of this event really highlighted that, for me anyways. But maybe I'm reading more into it.
No, I agree with you 100%. You know, I started, my first Apple was purchased in December of 1984. It was a Mac 512. And, you know, I always look back at, you know, the community that had already, by that time, built up around the Mac here in the Denver area. I went to these user group meetings. Of course, most of what we were doing at those meetings was going in and making copies on floppies of all sorts yeah. of software.
I remember those meetings well.
But, you know, what was so funny about that is I remember there were very, very few people who, if they got an app and really liked it, they would go out and buy it. You know, it wasn't really a community of
pirates.
You know, pirates going right. out there. Good point. But anyway, you know, the community's still there even when our premier event is no longer around. That being Macworld iWorld, the community is still there, and it's things like this wonderful podcast.
Well, you know, part of my job with OWC is to go and work at some of the trade shows. But I also go to other shows that we don't have a part of and see what it's like and if it's the kind of a show that we want to participate in the following year, right?
Yeah.
I call that shopping a show. And I've talked about it here on OWC Radio in the past. That's where I was last week, which is why OWC Radio wasn't released last week. I didn't get into late Wednesday night, and I was spent. Plus, I injured myself while I was at that last show.
Ouch.
Yeah, I pulled a muscle really high. Okay, I probably shouldn't have gone into this, but I'll give you a brief laugh here. So okay. I pulled a groin way up on the left-hand side. I mean, way up.
Oof.
And it didn't cause me to limp, but every step was super, super painful.
Ouch.
And this event was at the MGM Grand. Now, I don't know, Steve, if you've ever been to the MGM Grand, but it's massive.
Yes.
It's just huge. And to get anywhere, it just takes forever to walk there. I was in the West Tower, and the conference that happened was on the opposite side, so that's a long walk. If I want to go get anything to eat, I got to go outside and walk down. It's just everywhere was a long walk. I'm literally at Walgreens down the street from the MGM Grand talking to my wife on the phone, and she says, get some Icy Hot and put the Icy Hot on there. Good idea. So I buy the Walmart equivalent generic brand, right? And it comes with a little rollerball applicator. And Icy Hot, for those who don't know, is supposed to kind of relax and help heal your muscle. But it's really, it feels cold when you put it on, and it really warms up. I mean, really warms up. So I use this very high on my groin. And let's just say things shifted around a little bit, and this deep heat penetration that they talk about on the packaging for this product is accurate.
Oh,
is
my gosh.
Very accurate.
Ow.
Unfortunately, I put it on at night, so I didn't sleep very well that night.
Oh.
Even washing it didn't help because, again, penetrating. So.
Oh.
That will, although I will say, I'm going to carry it in my bag for now on when I'm traveling. And if I don't have access to a coffee in the morning, I'm just going to use this because it's going to wake you up.
Keep you awake.
It's going to wake you up. You're not going to be sleepy. I can promise you that. Anyways. So I've been looking at a lot of different trade shows. And for the most part, to be honest, Steve, they're busy. They're really busy. We heard in the Apple universe, trade shows are dead. The internet's killed it. Apple doesn't need trade shows because they get, 4 million people a year going into their stores, which is probably correct. But that doesn't take into account companies like OWC and software developers and other hardware makers and the big community that surrounds the Apple universe. I do think that there's an opportunity for someone to come out with an Apple-focused conference that would be very successful.
Yeah, I'm kind of the opinion, of course, having worked for a large corporation that decided that having a focused blog about the largest company in the world was a bad idea. But I have this feeling that, if you take a look at the Macworld iWorld, IDG World Expo, that there was some misdirection there. I think maybe they could have looked at some different ways of handling that show to maybe reduce the cost a little bit. You know, San Francisco is a very, very expensive place.
And everything you do there is expensive. Everything.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember years ago, and you probably do too, when Apple pulled out and there was this, you know, kind of town meeting where they got everybody together and said, hey, you know, what do you think we ought to do with Macworld iWorld? And one suggestion that, you know, I thought was absolutely great was have it move around, have it go to different cities, have it, you know, in Denver one year, have it in Milwaukee the next year, you know, have it, you know, wherever. But, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, they probably could have reduced their costs a lot and still had the show and gained an entirely new audience and spread that wealth of community around. So I'm hoping that somebody does pick up the banner, so to speak, and,
me too,
and marches on.
Me too. I would love to have another gathering of Apple users. That community was so fun to be around. And I would love to have that again. And I do miss it. And to be honest, I didn't go to the last two because that show really did feel like it was dying. And it was depressing. So I didn't go to the last two. But, you know, these events like we just had, that Apple just had, it kind of fosters at least some of that again. We all start communicating. And I was on Twitter the entire time on the OWC Twitter account, chatting with people, like I said, and I loved it. It was fantastic. That sense of community, as good as that was, though, it still isn't the same as being in person, meeting people.
Yeah.
You know, standing outside the doors before they actually open the hallway in the morning and just chatting with people that you don't know, but you have this something in common, this commonality, and you meet people from all over the world. I can't tell you, I met people from all over. I loved it.
Well, and it's funny because some of those people that I met years and years ago, standing in line for an Apple keynote, you know, it's just bizarre thinking about it because I still know them. There was a guy, you know, you talk about one of those strange associations. I think it was 2007. At Macworld iWorld, I get up really early.
That was a big show.
Yeah, iPhone. Yep. Yeah, and you know, I'm standing in line, and there's this this man and his son next to me, and of course we hit up a conversation, and it turns out that not only is he from Colorado, he was actually from Colorado Springs, which is about 60 miles south of where I live, but he was another Apple consultant. And at that time, I was deeply into Apple Consultants Network and doing all this. And so he and I became really close friends. It was just so bizarre. You know, you randomly get into line and you meet somebody like that. Also, you know, I always remember the press room, you know, as I started getting more and more into blogging. Getting into the press room and meeting people literally from all over the planet. And
that's where you and I think that's the only time we've ever met in person was at Macworld Expos. Quite a few of them, usually in the press room, you'd be sitting there and I'd be sitting there.
Yeah, and Tim would come walking over and, you know, he'd grab his thing of Icy Hot and
wake you up. I remember I used to record segments for different podcasts in the press room with different people, and I had you on quite a few of those.
Yeah.
I loved walking up to people with a microphone going, hey, you got about 10 minutes? They look at the microphone and go, oh boy, here we go.
But yeah, I remember, you know, doing a lot of those. But, you know, once again, that sense of community, you could kind of see that in a lot of the tweets that were coming out from the media members who were actually at the event yesterday.
Yeah.
There's one person, and I know you read him, I read him, Federico Vitici, MacStories.net.
Yep.
And Federico, yesterday, that was his first Apple event. He was invited, you know, to be a media person, flew over from Italy. And it was so cool, not only to see all these other people who had talked to him, been on podcasts with him, but they were actually meeting him in person for the first time. And then he got to take a selfie with Tim Cook.
Oh, really?
What's that?
That's cool. That is pretty. I'm looking on his. Is it? I don't see it on his. Well, wait. It might be down a little bit. No, he didn't put it on his website.
Well, he's probably flying back because I think he.
I'm looking at his Twitter account, which is twitter.com/MacStoriesNet, one word.
Huh.
Because I want to see the selfie now. But,
okay, yeah, I'm going to have to look now, too.
Here's the problem. It's not showing me the pictures. I have to actually click stuff, and I'm not going to do that. Oh, well. Anyways, let's talk about this event a little bit. Okay, for the whole show. and yes, I usually, as people know, I usually have two segments. But just like the last time I had Steve on the show, we're just going to do the whole show right here. The first thing Apple talked about, which I know some people got excited about for a second because they were hoping for a new version, and that was the Apple TV. And of course, the big announcement with the Apple TV, actually two. Number one, Steve, they dropped the price to $69. That's just a great price.
I think they really should have dropped it quite a bit more. And the reason I'm saying that is if you take a look at some of the other devices that are out there, somebody is trying to call me right in the middle of this. And I have no idea who it is. So, here we go.
He found the button.
Now, I have no idea who that is. It's like, people, stop calling me. Okay. Where were we?
The price of the Apple TV.
Price of the Apple TV. I think it was a good start, but if you take a look at some of the other devices that are out there, they got a long ways to go. And the reason I'm saying that is Amazon, of course, with their Fire TV and Fire TV Stick.
I have the Fire TV Stick myself.
Yeah, $39 for that thing.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic device. It really is.
And it does a lot more, yeah. Fire TV, of course, now looks like an expensive device, you know, because it's $99. But
the one to beat, though, is the Roku.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one everyone really... It almost has an Apple-esque following at this point. People love the Rokus.
Yeah.
And what is it, $59, $69,
$99? It jumps around. The streaming stick is $49, it looks like.
Yeah, but the box itself, I believe, is $99.
Yeah.
So I think Apple's competitive at $69. Let's just call it $70. To me, $69 sounds a lot better than $99. It's almost stocking stuffer price at that point.
Yeah, it's almost hey, I walked into the store and I feel like buying something. I think I'll pick one of these up.
Yeah, this will go on the TV in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a good price point. And they inked a limited time exclusive deal with HBO. They actually had the CEO, Richard, I think it's Pefler?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
It's P-L-E-P-L-E-R. Way too many P's and L's in that name, Richard.
We'll go with Plepler.
Plepler. he came out and announced that finally you could get HBO, you could subscribe to HBO Now for $15 a month, $14.99. And that's a big deal. And of course, the exclusive part is you can only do that with an Apple device, Apple TV, iPhone, iPad. Initially, although you got to assume that's coming to everybody else pretty quickly. Now, for someone like me who actually has, you know, pays Comcast a lot of money for my cable service, including HBO, it's not a big deal. I already got HBO on pretty much any device I want, which, except, by the way, PlayStation. Comcast doesn't allow it on PlayStation yet. I don't know why. Yeah. It's crazy. But for cord cutters, people who have given up their cable TV subscription, I know that's kind of a big movement for a lot of people. $15, you get HBO. That's not bad at all.
Exactly. And I remember back in the day, my wife and I, basically the only reason we got HBO was for The Sopranos.
Oh, yes.
You know, one of my all-time favorite shows. And it was, shortly after The Sopranos went off the air, we were kind of going, I'm not sure I really want to watch any of these other shows. You know, occasionally we'd watch a movie, but we ended up dropping it. For $15 a month, I'm almost ready to basically make a subscription and be able to watch it through that device, and or any Apple device for that matter. I think that's a wonderful price point. It really makes it very affordable for a lot more people.
New kids on the block. No, it's new kits on the block. That's how Jared worded it. Jared worded it up on the Mac Sales blog. iPhone. And instead of focusing on anything new with the iPhone, because let's be honest, they just came out with iPhone 6 months ago.
Yeah.
It was really about the kits, these developer kits, and in particular, Health Kit, and I think even the bigger one, Research Kit.
Yes.
I really, really enjoyed this aspect of the presentation, Steve. I thought this was... I think this shows who Apple really is. It's not always about selling another device. Sometimes it's giving back to the community. Sometimes that community is a worldwide community as well. And it allows researchers to quickly build apps, to share data, to really help people. And you just don't see stuff like this very often. And I was so encouraged and happy to see this.
Well, I just loved, the emphasis on some of the, I guess you could call them the big diseases out there, Parkinson's disease, asthma. There was a mention at one point of arthritis. My wife has had rheumatoid arthritis since she was 25, which is, I hate to say this, but quite a few years ago. And being able as a researcher to say, you know, occasionally, I can go out and I can grab some information from a population of people who suffer from asthma or arthritis to be able to say, you know, once a week, if you'd like to, I would like to ask you some questions about how you feel, how your mobility is. And oh, by the way, I've got a way of testing to see how your disease is affecting you today just by having you take a walk or tap on the screen or say something. Incredible way of doing that. And, you know, like you said, it's not about Apple. It's about having this device that a lot of people own, being able to capture information that researchers are going to be able to use. It takes a lot of the subjective bias out of doing medical research as well. You know, they talked about Parkinson's disease. Right now, one of the things that they do is have this mobility test where a doctor watches a person walk and then ranks them on a score of 1 to 5. And I said, that's very subjective. You know, one doctor can choose a 2, another doctor could choose a 5, looking at the same person. Well, this uses the actual
accelerometer and gyroscope.
To actually track that person's gait and be able to see how they're moving. I thought, you know, what an incredible world we live in right now. Apple, by doing that yesterday, I think that was probably the biggest announcement they made.
I think as part of that, though, them making this open source,
yes,
i.e. not limiting it to just Apple devices,
yeah,
that was amazing. I literally was watching it on my Apple TV in front of the computer, and I went, wow, when they said it's open source.
Yeah.
Because that means Android, that means Windows phones, that's what you need. It can't be just for one product, because if it is, some people could say, well, yeah, that's very blah, 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 but it only works on the iPhone. Well, yeah. No, this will work on any phone. That's amazing.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if some of the other manufacturers, and I hate to, you know, throw the onus on Samsung, but it would be interesting to see if Samsung actually goes in and says, you know, let's be part of this. Let's do this.
I hope
or, so. HTC or some of the other manufacturers, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, let's put the competitive stuff to the side and just do what's right. Just do what's right. And I'm with you. I hope more of them do it, and I'll applaud each one who does.
Me too.
To me, while I enjoyed listening to all the Apple Watch stuff, and we'll get to that as well, from a product standpoint, there's a new MacBook out here, and wow, this is totally different than any computer Apple has released before, Steve.
Yeah, it is. In fact, somebody brought up the point that at 2 pounds, that new MacBook weighs quite a bit less than the battery from the original Mac Portable, which is a really scary thought. But I saw this thing and I'm going, how do you make something thinner than a MacBook Air?
Yeah, they did.
And incredible engineering on that device.
I was kind of surprised. Sorry, I'm a little stuffy right now. It's just hitting me. I was a little surprised, to be honest, and I still don't know what to think about this. And I do think this is the big news of this machine, is USB-C.
Yes.
It has one port on it. And immediately, I think, okay, they did that because in a perfect world, no one's plugging anything into this thing except to charge it. And then everybody is just beautiful people who use this at their kitchen counter or they use it at Starbucks and they take it home and they plug it in and that's it. That's all they do with it. But in the real world, people plug a lot of things into their computers.
I have a funny feeling that a lot of companies today are either working on or starting to work on USB-C hubs.
No comment from me. but I will say, it's a huge problem in that Apple designed this thing, and now you have to buy other products to go with it just to get the functionality back.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this morning, waiting at the bus stop, waiting for my son's bus to get there to pick him up for school. Let's say I'm going to use this as my main computer. Now, it's only 12-inch screen, so I'm going to want a bigger monitor a lot of the time, right? So where do I plug it in? Well, I have to get an adapter to plug it into that port, except now I can't charge my laptop as the monitor's plugged in there, right? Well, that's kind of a problem.
I don't know. You know, that's I don't know because
without
I,
a hub, I, there's a,
yeah,
there's
without
no
a
way.
Hub, probably not. Yeah.
So I was thinking, oh well, maybe they'll release like a MacBook Pro with this, but they'll put multiple USB-C plugs on it. But they can't, and they can't because it's one plug. How do you know which one to plug the power cord into?
Well, you could maybe put them into any one of them because if I remember correctly, the USB-C standard, so to speak, one of the big deals there is the ability to really send a lot more power through there. So it may be one of those things that, hey, whatever port happens to be convenient, plug it in, life is good.
That's a lot of internal engineering to route power from multiple plugs into – I don't see that happening, to be honest. I think that's why it's one plug.
Keep people from going, I'll just plug it in here.
Anywhere. Yeah.
Hey, look at the smoke.
The only thing I think that they could have added to this would be maybe induction charging. Maybe if they sold a little pad that you could just put it on top of and it pulls power that way.
Oh, that would have been nice.
But you know what this really reminded me of, especially when they were showing the motherboard itself, which is super small. This is an iPad, Steve. This is the same type of motherboard you're finding in an iPad or even an iPhone.
Yeah.
But now it's a laptop computer.
Yeah, the fact that they were able to go in and make these kind of stepped battery packs that fit into the little niches there, that was my thought exactly, is, you know, it's like you're taking an iPad and putting a keyboard on it, which kind of begs the question, why not just buy an iPad with a keyboard if you're going to be doing this type of thing and you want a device with one port? I had written up a thing for Apple World Today yesterday looking at this. You know, the system on a chip that they're using, it looks like they're using the Intel Core M5Y70. It's a Broadwell system on a chip.
Which is a much slower chip than the ones that are currently shipping in the Airs and the MacBook Pros. Much slower.
Now, Yeah, it does have quite a bit more. I mean, it uses less power. It does have quite a bit more on board. Like, you know, I'm thinking it's like maybe 50% more onboard cache. So that may help some things out a little bit. You know, so that's a limitation. You take a look at the fact that it doesn't have a fan. That, you know, sounds like a big deal. But then again,
you don't have a fan on your iPad.
Yeah, you don't have a fan on your iPad. I thought it was nice that it does come with 8 gigabytes of RAM standard. I thought that was nice. But then again, you can't upgrade anything on this. Yeah.
You can't upgrade the hard drive. You can't upgrade the RAM. I understand Apple's design philosophy, but I'm not buying a Bic Pen that I throw away when I'm done using it. And this thing is, compared to even the currently shipping computers, grossly underpowered, and I can't upgrade it at all. Any upgrade is going to have to be external. And that's good for some people, but for others it's not. I don't know. I was kind of surprised that they released this and they kept the MacBook Airs. I don't see why they have both of those, to be honest, Steve. Why do they have the MacBook Air at this point and the MacBook?
I'm kind of guessing, and this is just, you know, wild guess, which a lot of us love to do, but my guess is that eventually you're going to see the MacBook Air just kind of disappear.
It has to, doesn't it? Because it's smaller and lighter than a MacBook Air, so that advantage is gone.
It's got a better display than the MacBook Air.
And if you do need all those ports, well, then you just get a MacBook Pro.
Yeah, you buy a MacBook Pro and you're happy there. So,
you know, Apple is really pushing the Lightning connectors and the Thunderbolt, and then they go in USB-C now. It's just, you know, and they've never been afraid to leave other standards behind, but I don't know. I'm baffled by this. I want to be excited about it, but I'm really not. I'm more baffled than anything else. It's very interesting, and it makes great fodder for a podcast like this. Don't get me wrong.
It does. But, well, you know, it's just like everything that you took a look at. It's like, well, that seems like an odd design choice. For instance, even the FaceTime camera is only 480p.
Yeah.
The MacBook Airs at this point are 720p, and I may be wrong, but I think the MacBook Pro may have even a better camera.
No, I think maybe it's the same. I think it's 720p.
720p? Yeah. But it's just, you know, once again, it's kind of an odd little device there. That being said, you know, I was kind of looking at this, and I thought, who would that be a good device for?
Yep.
Now, if you have a student who is doing nothing but writing papers, taking notes, you know, sending emails, doing stuff like that, it's a perfect device.
Yep.
Yeah, because it's really, really lightweight.
To a certain extent.
It's
for the road warrior.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
This is not your main computer. This isn't my Mac that I use every day. This is the one I take with me when I go wherever. But couldn't you do that with an iPad?
That's what I was thinking.
Couldn't you do that? And really, let's be honest. How much does a MacBook Air weigh? It's less than 3 pounds, right?
Right.
What's the difference between 2 pounds and 3 pounds when it's going to be in a backpack? The backpack itself already weighs a couple pounds, right?
Yeah.
What's the difference in 1 pound? I don't see where this fits in. I really don't.
Yeah, it almost seemed like it was an engineering trick just to do an engineering trick.
Right. I don't get it.
Yeah. So it is very, very confusing.
It makes it from a product standpoint, I think you probably are like me. We go back to the old days where Steve Jobs came in, and he always gets credit for this, but a lot of this started actually with Gil Amelio. Was simplifying the product line.
Yeah.
They had two products in each category, and there was only two categories. Desktop computers, you had the Power Mac, and the consumers was the iMac. In portable, you had the PowerBook and the iBook, right?
Yeah.
Look at their product category now in just computers. Don't even put in iOS devices in there. Just computers. It's all over the place. And where do you put this MacBook in relation to a MacBook Pro, which it clearly isn't as powerful, doesn't have as much expandability or upgradability, but yet it's pretty much equal to a MacBook Air. But yet, it's in some regards, it's not as good.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I really don't.
And it costs more.
And it costs more. If they would have came out with this and said, and this is our $799 version, and you can get one with twice as much memory and hard drive for $1,199, I'd have been like, wow, that's amazing. That's great. But it's a premium priced product. I don't get it. And I'm not even talking about the colors yet. Gold, really? Who wants a gold computer? I sure don't. But maybe that, some people are buying the gold iPhones. Great. I've got a tannish gold cover for my iPad Air 2, and it looks pretty cool, but I could change that. But I don't want a gold computer. I thought, ugh. And here's where I was talking about earlier, bringing in some questions. I asked the Twitter followers out there that I was conversing with, which one do you want? You want the slate gray, or no, space age gray, or is it just space age?
I think it's space gray.
Space gray, yeah. Silver, or gold. One person voted for gray, one for gold, and everybody else was the space age gray. Everybody.
Huh.
It wasn't even close.
Wow.
This one USB-C port is a display port, VGA, power. It does pretty much everything you want it to do, except there's zero products out there that's going to plug into it.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's a Core M processor.
Yeah.
256 gigs SSD, which isn't very good, Steve, and only 8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
Now you can get a 512 SSD for $15.99. And you get, this kind of cracks me up, for $12.99, 1.1 gigahertz. For $15.99, 1.2 gigahertz. Oh, gee, thanks.
Wow, that really improved. Well, where it helps, though, is on turbo boost mode, because I think the 1.1 can only pop up to turbo boost of 2.4 gigahertz.
Yep.
Goes up to 2.9 on the higher end chip there. But still, that's for very rare occasions where it's going to jump to that speed. Most of the time it's going to be puttering around 1.1 to 1.3 gigahertz. And it's just, I don't know. Yeah.
You know,
very, very weird.
I really want to do on this new computer, though, I want to type on it. I really like the emphasis Apple put on the keyboard. It's been a long time since Apple even bother to mention a keyboard. It has individual LEDs underneath each key. It has a new butterfly spring system when you're typing. That all sounds really, really good. In fact, didn't they bring that over to the MacBook Pro as well, or one of them? The 13-inch MacBook Pro gets a Force Touch trackpad.
Yeah, that's right.
But it doesn't say, I don't know if they're getting the keyboard or not. I kind of doubt it, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of fascinating, too, that you're seeing some of the fruits of the Apple Watch starting to come out onto the new products, like Force Touch, being able to get that haptic feedback where
it feels like... Although I did hear George Lucas and Disney are having a problem with the name.
The Force Touch. Yeah, but if I remember correctly, I think that Steve Jobs' widow is still one of the biggest shareholders in Disney. She is. So,
unless she sold it, and I don't think she did.
Yeah, Lauren may just tell him to be quiet.
And I do like the new lightsaber connector, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think you're right. You're seeing some of the engineering that they did for the Apple Watch making its way to other products. I think the Force Touch is cool. It's basically a pressure sensitive pad at this point.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because I think a lot of graphic artists, for instance, CAD designers, for instance, they could really take advantage of that. There's apps that could be built just around that feature alone.
Yeah, the one thing I thought was really cool was the harder you push, the faster you would scrub through something. For instance, if you're editing audio or video, you know, what a brilliant way to do that. You know, I'm going to push a little harder, it's going to scrub a little bit faster. Awesome idea there, providing that touch or that pressure capability to be able to do that. Our accessibility writer brought up another point. You know, he said the fact that you're for once able to go in and adjust the feedback, so to speak, on that keyboard and the sensitivity of it. I mean, not the keyboard, the trackpad. So that could really help out people with like bad arthritis or
absolutely
have tremors, because they'll be able to say, well, you know, I need to make this less sensitive than it currently is because I kind of have a heavy hand, or I need to make it so I don't have to put as much pressure on here because it hurts my hand to do this. Brilliant design again.
Now, the last thing, of course, Steve, is the Apple Watch. And this is, I think, the most anticipated thing to talk about, because the only thing that we knew about pricing on the Apple Watch was that it starts at $349, and that would be for the Apple Watch Sport. And there's a lot of speculation. Well, how much is the stainless steel one going to cost? What about the 18-karat gold, even though the people that are talking about the 18-karat gold probably can't afford one anyways? That was kind of everybody wanted those questions answered, and Apple gave it to us. $349 for the 38-millimeter sport watch, which is aluminum, or $399 for the 42-millimeter. Now, that doesn't sound like there's a big difference between the 38 and the 42. It's huge when it comes to watches. That's a big difference in size. The stainless steel watch starts at $349 for the 38-millimeter and $599 for the 42. And the gold Apple watch, it just starts at
$10,000. Yeah, you don't even have to ask.
Here's the interesting thing. You can't buy the Apple Gold watch in the Apple Store. Yeah. If you go back and listen to the keynote, Tim Cook said at select retailers, which to me means you're not going to get this at Target or Walmart. You're not going to get it at the Apple Store. You're going to have to go to a really nice kind of jewelry store to get this.
You know, and I think that if that's the case, that is absolutely brilliant, because first of all, your high-end jewelry stores have the security to have these things.
You know, you can't have this at an Apple store.
Yeah, you walk into an Apple store, you know, you're going to have people walking in, grabbing the watch, and walking out with it.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that with a $10,000 device. But, you know, it was funny because our grocery store is right over near a very big high-end jewelry seller. And I kept thinking, you know, it'll be really interesting to see if Apple does make that decision. And I think they are. I think they're going to go in, you know, like you said, they made the comment about going to a retailer to buy this.
I think it's more like Nordstrom's and stuff like that.
Yeah, we did see that Nordstrom was having discussions with Apple about that. Mm-hmm. But I think you're also going to see high-end jewelers as well. Just wild guess here, but they're the people who really know how to sell that stuff anyway. They're the ones who sell Rolexes. They're the people who sell...
Yeah, but there's a difference between selling a really nice Rolex and a really nice computer on your wrist. And that's what the Apple Watch is. It's a computer on your wrist. And here's my other thought on such an... I can understand the stainless steel even going up to $1099. At $10,000, your watch is basically, after 3 years, not worth having anymore. You know, there's going to be apps that come out by the time the iPhone Watch 3 or 4 comes out that's just not compatible with this first generation. You've got a $10,000 watch that you're just going to stick in a drawer and go buy another one? Now, look, I know that there are people out there who don't care about stuff like that. They can afford it, and it's a status symbol for them. They'll buy a brand new $10,000 watch every year.
Yeah.
But that's few and far between.
Yeah.
I don't get the 18-karat gold one. I just don't.
Yeah, I think the people who can afford to spend the $10,000 for one of these gold watches, there are also the people who are kind of the movers and shakers, people who are seen, the people who you know, will either be on TV or in a movie or, you know, seen on the red carpet at the Oscars or something like that.
So it's a status symbol.
Yeah, and they're going to have that Apple Watch on their arm. Everybody's going to see it. They're going to go, wow, we know how much that costs. He's got a $10,000 Apple Watch on his. You know, so it is definitely a status symbol. Frankly, I think any one of these is going to be kind of a cool status symbol type thing. I think you're going to get a lot of questions from people when they first come out.
Well, my question is, do you, Steve Sandy, want an Apple Watch? Did they convince you with the two keynotes or speeches now that we've seen? Are you going to go out there and plunk your money down for one, or do you want to plunk your money down for one? Have they sold you?
Yes, they have sold me. The difference is, previously I was thinking, hey, I'm going to get one of those stainless steel models. Maybe not so much. After I started to take a look at the specific model and band that I wanted and realized that I was going to spend about $750, I said, no, I can go with a sports model. Mm-hmm. So, I definitely want one just to be able to try the functionality. I know I've had some people say to me, well, Steve, why don't you go out and get one of the new Pebble Time Steel watches, you know, kind of put your money down on one of those and, you know, a lot more apps available and all that. I'm sorry. I'm going to buy an Apple device.
And as far as more apps available, until day one of the Apple Watch launch.
Yeah.
There's no question that the Apple Watch is going to have a lot more. I'm still on the fence. Look, don't get me wrong. If someone said, here's an Apple Watch, we want you to wear it and use it so you could talk about it on OWC Radio, I'm in. I'm absolutely in. But when it comes to spending my own money for it, I think my wife would have a problem with spending that much money on just a watch, because I'm not a watch wearer to begin with. I used to be years ago, but
yeah,
to be honest, once I got my first flip phone, I didn't need my watch anymore. I just pull out my phone and see what time it was.
Exactly. Well, I remember buying, and this was, God, probably 8 or 9 years ago, I bought a Tissot T-Touch watch, which is a nice high-end $700 watch. And, you know, at that time, I was wearing a watch all the time, constantly wore this. And so I had this beautiful high-end watch that you had a lot of different functions that you could do with it. Actually had a touch screen on it, you know, believe it or not, 7 or 8 years ago. I stopped wearing that probably about 2009. And it was simply because, you know, like you said, all of a sudden you're going, why do I need a watch? I don't need a watch. Yeah. This device. On the other hand, now that I've got an iPhone 6 Plus, I kind of don't like to have to reach into my pocket and lug this out, except when I'm, you know, in a situation where I know I'm going to be playing a game, responding to an email, doing something like that. So I think just being able to have a device to give me those notifications, to you know, let me respond to messages quickly, that's going to be nice. Is it worth $350 on up to be able to do that?
Yeah,
that's the question a lot of people are going to have to answer.
I don't know. You know, other than the original iPod, I'm pretty accurate with my predictions on the success of Apple products. Now, I think the new MacBook will be successful. I think that the rest of the PC industry will embrace USB-C, and it'll be a big seller. You'll see that port making its way to the other Apple devices. The last one to get one will probably be the Mac Pro, because for whatever reason, the Mac Pro and the Mac Mini always get whatever that thing is last, and usually 3 or 4 years later. But I think that'll be a successful product. I think that the health kit stuff, that's going to be bigger than most people realize.
Yeah.
The Apple Watch, I'm just completely on the fence. I have no idea. I hear a lot of people saying that they want it. But I don't think a lot of people that say they want it is actually going to plunk their money down.
Well, and I think you're also going to have a number of people. I mean, for me, writing about these devices is kind of one reason why I want one. But also, we get a lot of applications for review, yeah. And it's going to be nice to be able to say, oh, by the way, this app XYZ over here happens to have a... you know, an app for Apple Watch. This is how you interact with it. Isn't that cool? You know, so that's a good thing there. But, you know, I just don't see a lot of people, if they're not constantly out there looking for new apps for the device or realizing that a lot of the apps that they currently have may have functionality on the watch as well. I don't think you're going to see a lot of people who are going to really use it all that much. And I almost wonder if this is one of those things. People are going to buy the first generation, you know, go out and get it, wear it for a while, and then it ends up in a drawer.
Yeah, I don't know. It could go either way. And Apple didn't answer my questions that I had of it. What if I accidentally leave my iPhone at home?
Yeah.
What does the watch do then? What kind of functionality does it have without my iPhone present?
Yeah, can I still tell what time it is?
Right, yeah. I'm sure it'll do that, but, you know, what about the Uber thing? Well, I don't think it'll do that.
Definitely not.
I don't think any of the apps will work. I know it has onboard storage and music control, so you could actually put music on it. But I don't know. There's so many unanswered questions about the Apple Watch. I think for a lot of people, it's one thing to say, yeah, you know what? I've had an iPhone for the last couple years. I think maybe I want to try a Windows phone, or maybe I want to try an Android. That happens. But if you buy a watch, now you're tied to your phone. And, oh, by the way, what happens if I upgrade my phone? How easy is it to migrate my watch to one phone to the other? Because it can't be too easy. Otherwise, anybody with an iPhone comes in and goes, oh, look, there's an Apple Watch. I'm going to install some stuff on it for them. You know, it's... I don't know. There's so many unanswered questions, although with that, what I just said, is that's tied to your Apple ID, so I'm not so worried about that. But I don't know. It's too many unanswered questions. I want one from a professional standpoint. I want to be able to talk about it. I want to be able to recommend apps for it. But I'm not willing to pay my own money for it. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe, you know, if I do get a chance to use one and fall in love with it, maybe I'll absolutely want to go buy it. But I don't know. Right now, I can't see spending my own money for it. And I don't see what it's going to do for me outside of OWC Radio and writing about it and talking about it, you know. Other than those aspects of my professional life, I don't see what I'm going to get out of an Apple Watch that I don't already have with my iPhone.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a reason I went to an iPhone 6 Plus, just like you, a bigger screen. Now I'm going to get one that's an eighth of the size on my wrist. I really need to keep my glasses, my reading glasses with me at all times at that point because I can't see my watch.
You know, a couple of the things that I thought were really interesting yesterday. First of all, they kind of, I think, laid a lot of the concerns about battery life to rest. You know, it will last about 18 hours.
Well, that's if you don't do much with it.
Yeah. And you know darn well that there are going to be a lot of people that first week that they've got the device on their wrist, they're going to be just dealing with it constantly.
Yep.
And they're going to get 5 hours worth of battery life, and they're going to take it back to the store.
Oh, and you're going to hear about it on Twitter and Facebook, and all these different Mac websites are going to be saying, the battery is atrocious. I got 4.5 hours out of mine and it went dead. Well, yeah, but you were tinkering with it all day, or well, for the entire 4.5 hours. Of course you only got 4.5. In real world usage, you put your watch on and maybe once an hour you'd mess with it for something other than looking at the time. That's the real world, and it should last all day if you use it like that. I do like the power for it, though, that you just get it kind of close to it, and it just smacks in and locks into place. That's kind of neat. But
that is really cool, and I'd like to see that with other devices. Oh. It's almost like, You know, inductive charging is so cool.
It is. I had an the only HP touchpad that ever came out, and it used induction charging. You could buy a little stand that came from HP that they sent me to use with it, and it was, I never had to plug it in. I just put it in the little stand, and it starts charging up. Now, look, it wasn't fast charge. Induction charging takes a lot longer to charge up a device than just plugging it in. But still, just the ability to set it there and not even think about it, that was great.
Yeah, we did hear, I don't think it was during the session yesterday, but apparently it does take about 2 hours to do a charge on this device, which is kind of interesting.
I think Apple's probably going to sell 2 chargers per watch. That will be the big upsell for them. Keep one at work and keep one at home. So when you're at work, you can take off your watch and just let it charge up for a couple hours if you need to.
Yep.
That would be a good little secondary market for Apple.
Of course, you're not going to get notifications if it's sitting on the charger.
Or will you? I don't know.
No. There was trying to remember exactly where I saw that the other day, but apparently the watch actually has to be on your wrist for you to get notifications. If it's taken off, it assumes that, oh, well, you're not going to be looking at me, so...
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And in fact, it would kind of be annoying if it kept doing notifications when it wasn't on.
Yeah, buzz.
Yeah. Buzz. What was that?
Yeah. Hey, I wonder if that, you know, one question out there that we'll have to answer once we, you know, somebody actually gets one of these. Does it have a do not disturb mode?
Oh, it's got to. And it probably just reads that from your iPhone. That's something that when you...
We can only hope.
Yeah, let's hope so. Because I use Do Not Disturb on my iPad because when I go to bed at night, I take my iPad with me and I do some reading before I fall asleep. So I have my iPad set for Do Not Disturb from 10 p.m. until 6 p.m., 24 hours a day. So between those times, I get no notifications or anything on my iPad because I don't want it buzzing because someone texted me at 3 in the morning. You know, the iPhone, no, that's notifications are always on. I don't have Do Not Disturb on that, but that's always in my office. I don't have to worry about that when I'm in bed. But my iPad, more often than not, is right on the table next to me, and I don't want it to disturb me. But it will disturb you if you set an alarm. I've had someone ask me that before. If you set an alarm, it will still make the noise, even if you forget to turn up the volume. It will wake you up. But the notifications, nope, it silences those. So important distinction between Do Not Disturb and an alarm. An alarm overrides Do Not Disturb.
Yeah, I think one thing that we're absolutely sure of is that on April 10th, which is the day that they will actually have these things in the store to look at, I think the stores are going to be absolutely jam-packed. I would hate to be an Apple employee on that day.
No, it's got to be fun. You got all these excited people coming in to try something, and they all have questions. That's fun. Have you ever worked retail?
Years and years and years ago when I was in college.
So let's talk a little bit before we wrap up here about some of your writing that you've been doing up at appleworld.today as well as the OWC blog. What have you been writing about lately other than this Apple event?
Let's see. You know, like you said, the Apple event was kind of the big deal there. Over at the OWC blog, which, speaking of which, I've got to write more here today. But we talked a little bit about some event that was going to be happening, and of course it happened. Also a tip on the iPhone on how to block unwanted callers.
I thought that was a really good article, by the way.
Well, it's so funny because what brought that up was I teach a class over at one of the local community colleges, and I had somebody in my class who was saying, I am so tired of these telemarketers. I got rid of my landline phone, and I'm just using my iPhone, and I'm so tired of these people. And I said, you know, there is a way that you can go in and you can block certain numbers. Now, telemarketers have a bad way, and actually one of the commenters on the OWC blog mention this, but there, you know, telemarketers will change numbers so that you're not always seeing the same thing. However, after a while, if you block those calls, you're going to have a lot of, you're going to be good.
Yep.
You're going to be.
And it's not too difficult to do, but I think a lot of people don't realize that you can block calls on an iPhone. And I think your blog post really helped a lot of people out.
Yeah, we also talked about, one of my favorite was talking about a $1.89 million iPhone accessory. It's called the Koenigsegg Regera. It's a hypercar. Yeah. They're only making 80 of them in Sweden. It's a,
I'll let you drive mine occasionally if you like.
Cool. And I'll let you use my watch.
Fair trade.
Yeah, we'll do that. But yeah, a lot of talk about that going on.
And you got more stuff coming.
Oh, God, yes.
Good. So people can find you, obviously, at blog.macsales.com. And every day they could find you at appleworld.today. What's your Twitter handle?
Twitter handle is at Stephen Sandy, and that's StevenSande.
Stephen, thank you very much for coming on OWC Radio this week. You notice I called you Stephen there.
Oh, that's nice. Well, Timothy.
Instead of saying my Steve, it's.
Yeah. Tim, I tell you, it's always a pleasure being on your show, talking with you. You're just a barrel of fun to be with on this show.
Especially with Icy Hot.
Yeah, especially with Icy Hot. Oh, boy.
If I actually named these shows, I think I would have to name this one Icy Hot. Steve, I'll see you soon.
Thanks.